Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Kesubos. We're going to learn Daf Ayin Tes Omid Beis and Emiyetz Hashem Daf Pei today. We begin on the very last few lines of Ayin Tes Omud Aleph. Three lines from the bottom with the words Omer Rav Zeira, Omer Rav Hoshaya, Omer Rav Yanai. So we have the following statement that's made over by Rav Zeira in the name of Rav Hoshaya, in the name of Rav Yanai. Others say, the Amri Law, it was made over Omer Rabbi Abba, Omer Rav Hoshaya, Omer Rav Yanai. It was said over by Rabbi Abba in the name of Rabbi Hoshaya, in the name of Rabbi Yanai. In any event, whether it was Rav Zeira or it was Rabbi Abba who said it, they said the following. Hagonev, and we turn to Ayin Tes Omud Beis. If one steals Vlad Behemas Mulug, if somebody steals the Vlad, the child of a Behema that belonged to the wife as part of her Nichse Mulug, so the husband has the right to the payros of such an animal, but the wife owns the principal, she owns the actual behemoth herself, that's called behemas nichse malog, and this is the child, so the person steals the child. So a ganav has to pay kefil. So who does he pay the kefil to? So either Rabbi Zeira or Rabbi Abba said over the name of Roshai, in the name of Rav Yanai, that he pays the kefil, mashalim tashlubi kefil or isha. He pays the second payment, the kefil payment, to the wife, the owner of the nichse malog, and not to the husband, who is normally entitled to the payros. So that was the statement that was made. Now, the Gemara asks, who is this in accord with? This is an Amora. Who is this in accord with? Kiman doesn't seem to appear, not like the two opinions that we know, which we're going to say in a moment from a Braisa, Lo Karabon, Lo Hananya. It doesn't look like it's the opinion of the Rabbanon, nor does it look like it's the opinion of Hananya. What is this? This we learn in the following Braisa, the Tanya. It tells us here in the Braisa, Vlad Behemas Melug Labal. If you have Nirse Melug, if you have this type of a dowry that the wife owns, that the husband's entitled to the payros, the animal gives birth, so the Vlad of such a Behema, the principal belongs to the wife, but the child of such a Behema is considered like payros and belongs to the Baal. However, Vlad Shivchas Melug Loisha, as opposed to a servant that the wife owns, as Nirse Melug here, the child that the Shivcha gives birth to, that child is the property of the Isha, not of the husband. So we have a difference, according to the Tanakhama, between the Chachamim, between the Vlad of an animal and the Vlad of a Shivcha. As opposed to the Chananya, now who is Chananya? He is the nephew of Yoshia, Ben Achi Yoshia. He is the son of the brother of Yoshia. He holds, Chananya holds, Omar, Asu Vlad Shivchas Belug, Kivlad Behemas Belug. He says that both the Vlad of the Behema and the Vlad of the Shivcha have the same halachic status, that they belong to the husband. These are considered payros. This is the usufruction rights of the husband with the Nifse Melug of his wife, and therefore he's entitled to both the Vlad of the Behema and the Vlad of the woman. Neither of them, neither the Tanakhama nor Chananya, hold that the Vlad is considered the ownership or the domain of the wife. So therefore, they would seemingly not hold that the tashlumim for kefil belong to the wife. So he says, no. Afilu temedi rekol. You could actually say that both Chananya as well as the Chachamim are in accord with this statement that was said by either Rabbi Abba or Rabbi Zeira. Because afilu temo divri akol, because peira takinu le rabbanon, however, peira de peira lo takinu le rabbanon. The peiros of the nifse melug, they belong to the husband. The usufruction rights, they belong to the husband. But the peiros of the peiros don't belong to the husband. Now, what exactly does this mean? After all, the din is, Tosus points out, the din is that the peiros do belong to the husband, and the peiri belong to the husband. So the difference is, and Tosus points this out in Dibra Maskel, peira de peira, says we're talking only about the extra double payment, not the principal. The principal, the Vlad, that does belong to the husband. But the second payment, the kefil payment, that belongs, as Tosus clearly says, Hainu kefil luchude, avol keren labal. This double payment, the extra payment, that belongs to the woman because that is not considered something that is intrinsically peiros of the animal. That is something that comes from a different perspective. It's not the actual peiros of the animal. And therefore, that belongs to the owner of the nifse melug, meaning the wife. And he brings down from the Rivan, who has a slightly different understanding of it, but the basic understanding is the same. He says that when you're dealing over here with something that comes from the animal itself, so that peira, the peira, goes to the husband. However, when you're dealing over here with Perid, the Osimi Alma, it comes like from a totally different place. The Kefal payment has nothing to do intrinsically with the animal that was stolen. That is an additional Knas that the Torah said, Lo Tokinule, that the husband doesn't get. And certainly, when you're dealing with something like Kefal payment, that is considered totally not coming from the animal. And the bottom line is that both Hananya and the Chacham could be in accord with the statement by Rabbi Abba or Rabbi Zeira that the Tashlume Kefal belong to the wife and not to the husband. Okay. Bishmar says, Bishlam al Hananya, this makes very good sense according to Hananya, because Hainu de lo Chashin lemisa, because Hananya is obviously not concerned about the principal being used up, i.e., the principal dying, that the animal or that the shivcha dies and then there's nothing left of the keren. He's not concerned about that. He says that in both situations, so vlad of the shivcha as well as the vlad of the behema, if it's from nichse malut, belongs to the husband and doesn't go back to the wife, and therefore she could potentially lose the keren, and he's not concerned about that. Haynu d'lo chashinu lemisa. However, El Rabbanan, they obviously clearly are concerned about misa in regards to the vlad of the shivcha, because they say that belongs to the wife. Why are they not concerned equally with the vlad of behema? They should be one and the same din. Hananya, we understand, across the board, he says, I'm not concerned about misa. If the principal dies, that's it. End of the discussion. There's no more principal, but the peres belong to the husband, whether it's the peres of malug from the behema or malug from the shivcha. El Rabbanan, Ichai Shalemisa, if you're concerned about Misa, then the din should be in both of them. Afilu Vlad Behemas Velug, Namilo. Then the payros of the Nirse Behemas Velug should not go to the husband, they should stay with the wife, because her principle is going to get used up. And if you're telling me Vilo Chai Shalemisa, they're not concerned, then why in the situation of the Shivcha, Afilu Vlad Shivchas Velug, Nami, should go to the husband and not to the wife? So there seems to be an inconsistency in the sheet of the Chachamim. Someone says, no. In fact, the Olam Chai Shlemisa, the Chachamim are concerned about the loss of the principal. However, the shiny behema, with the behema, there isn't a total loss of the principal, because the Ika Ora, you still have the hide. So even if the animal dies, so the wife will still retain some of the principal, the value of the hide. As opposed to when the Shivcha Nebuch passes away, so then in that situation, there's nothing left. So therefore, in regards to the shivcha, where the principal would be totally used up, so they give the vlad of the shivcha, that goes back to the wife. However, in the case of the behema, where it's not totally used up, there'll be a hide, there'll be a carcass that theoretically would belong to the wife, and she could go and sell that for whatever it's worth. So therefore, the principal's not totally used up. So therefore, in that situation, they're not concerned, lo chayshe levisa. Okay, so that explains why the Chacham seem to have a different opinion that seems to be inconsistent between the Vlad of the Behema and the Vlad of the Shivcha. Gemara says, how do we paskin? Amar Rav Huna Bar Chiya Amar Shmuel Halacha Ki Hananya. We paskin over here like the opinion of Hananya, that we don't make any distinction between the Vlad of the Shivcha or the Vlad of the Behema. They both belong to the husband. Amar Rav Amar Nachman, however, Afal Gavdi Amar Shmuel Halacha Ki Hananya, even though Rav Amar Nachman says that we just said that we paskin according to Shmuel like Hananya, nevertheless, even Hananya is Moda Hananya, Shimnis Karsha, that if the husband divorces the wife, so then, no sen is domim vinol talton, that even though he technically, according to Hananya, owns the vlad of the Shivcha, as we just pointed out, nevertheless, Moda Hananya, Shimnis Karsha, no sen is domim vinol talton, mitnei shevach beisavia. The wife has the right to say, I specifically want that child, because that's shevach beisavia. That Shivcha has been in our family, and therefore we're entitled to continue to keep that Shivcha descendants in our family. So as long as she pays the value, let's say it's worth $1,000, that child is worth $1,000, so therefore as long as she pays $1,000, she's entitled to get the Shivcha. The husband can't say, no, I want the Shivcha. No, I want the Vlad of the Shivcha. The husband can't say that. The Shivcha, obviously, that's Nirsei Maluk. That goes back to the wife. But even the Vlados of that Shivcha, if the wife wishes to pay for them, she's entitled to pay for them, and the husband can't protest and say, well, listen, I'm entitled to the Vlados, and this is mine, and you're not entitled to it even if you pay for it. No, she has the right to pay for it because of this concept of Shevach Beisavia. This is something that belongs to her family, and therefore, if she's willing to pay for the Vlados, she's entitled to the Vlados as long as she compensates the husband. The husband can't say, no, I'd rather have the Vlad and not take the compensation. So that's the additional caveat. The Rav Amar of Nachman says that even if you paskin as Shmuel did like Hananya, nevertheless, the wife is entitled to the Vlados as long as she pays for them. Furthermore, Amar of Nachman, another statement the Rav said in Rav Nachman, Hichnisa lo eiz lechalova v'rochel legiza, even if as part of the nifsei maluk that the wife brings into the marriage, she brings in a goat that's used for milking, or a sheep that's used for shearing, or betarnegoles lebeit sasa, or she brings in a chicken that's used for its eggs, or the deka leperosav, or she brings in a palm tree for the tamarim, for the dates, ochel v'holich ad shetich la'karen. The husband in each of these situations has the right to go and use up all the payros that come from these four items that she brought in, even though it's going to consume the keren. At some point in time, the animal will not be capable of producing the milk or the shearing or the chickens with the eggs or the fruits from the deco tree. So why in this situation does Rav Menachem say that there's no concern over here? Because there still is some principle left. After all, even if the goat doesn't have the ability to produce milk anymore, it's still worth something if you shecht it or if it dies and the hide. Similarly, the sheep with the shearings, even though it doesn't produce a lot of wool anymore, but it's still worth something. And likewise, the chicken, even if it dies, the feathers. And likewise, the palm tree, even if it doesn't produce fruit, it can be used for wood. So therefore, in each of these situations, there is somewhat of the keren remaining, and therefore there is no concern that the principle is totally being used up. Now, we just said a minute ago that the opinion of Chananya that we're not concerned about Misa. So Rashi is just pointing out that even according to the Chachamim, who are concerned about Misa, this din would apply. So it's not only according to the opinion of Chananya, but even according to the Chachamim, since there is some of the principle that's going to be remaining no matter what happens to these four types of property that she brings in. Therefore, even the Chachamim would say that there isn't a concern over here. The husband's entitled to use up all of the payros. Another statement, here we only have it in the name of Rav Nachman, not Rav is saying the name of Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman, Aila Le Glima. If the wife brings in as part of the Nichsim Malug, a coat, let's say, a garment, a Glima, certain type of a cloak, Peira Havi, it's considered for the husband to use it, that when he wears it, that's the payros of this garment, and mechasebe v'ozil, he's allowed to go and wear it continuously, ad d'chalya, until it's used up, so it becomes worn out, and this is in accord with who the Gemara says, come on, it goes in accord with the following opinion, Ki Tanya, that we learn the following price of the Tanya. Hamelach v'hachol, if you have salt or you have sand, that the wife owns, let's say, an area near the beach, and there's salt that is obtained by having some of the water from the salt water go into certain pools, and then they're not connected to the ocean, the water stays in there, the sun evaporates the water, and you're left behind with the salt. Or you have the actual sand. So she owns certain property. So the salt and the sand that come from that property are considered harezer peros. The town of this brisa says that is considered the peros of this property that the husband's entitled to. Likewise, if you have pier shel gofris, if you have a pit that has inside of it gofris is sulfur, or you have machpores, that's also like a mine that you have shel tsarif, for which there is, Rashi says, something called alum, a certain type of mineral that they mined. And it's used, Rashi says, shetsovim behem begarments. You're normally used to go and color garments. It's used as a dye. They use it for garments, for meshi, for silk. The chofrin also bekarka, and it's mined out from the ground. The sofa lechalos, and ultimately you're going to use up that row of minerals, and you reach the lagia, you sold karka b'yam, and you reach the bedrock, and there's no more of the mineral present over there. So in all of these situations, the salt, the sand, the sulfur, and the alum, the Rabbi Meir Omer Keren. Rabbi Meir says that they're considered like Keren. They're not considered like property, and the wife is entitled to them. However, the opinion of the Chachamim is Omer and Peros. They say that these are Peros. So when Rabbi Nachman said that the cloak, the glima that the wife brought in as Nixim, look, the husband gets to continue to use it until it's worn out. So this goes in accord with the opinion of the Chachamim that say that these are considered peros. So the usage of the cloak, the usage of the salt or the sand or the sulfur or the alum, that's considered peros. And there is still something left. So even according to Chachamim, not only according to Chananya, but even according to Chachamim, since there's something left of the principle, and even the Chachamim Machoshe Shlemisa, the principle is not entirely used up. Okay, that concludes this little sugya, and now we go on to quoting the Mishnah, where we said Rabbi Shimon Omer, Makom Shiofa Kocho, Vehule, so where Rabbi Shimon had said that wherever it was to her advantage going in, it will be her disadvantage going out. It was to his advantage going in, it will be to his disadvantage going out. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Haino Tanakama, the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, that things don't change, seems to be the same opinion as the Tanakama. So What is he adding over here? This is the Chachamim's opinion, Rashi says. This is the opinion of the Chachamim. The Chachamim said in the Reish of the Mishnah that if you had fruits that are attached to the ground, they belong to the husband. So isn't that what the Tanakhama Chachamim are saying? Is exactly the Rabbi Shimon. He says that you look at it at that point, that it's attached to the ground, it's considered peiros, it belongs to the husband. So that's what the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon both say. So Rabbi says, no. Amar Rava, mechubarin b'shas yitzia ikabinayu. No. The Chachamim, they hold that even at the time that the divorce occurs and the Nichsei Meluga going back to the wife, so they still hold that if it's attached to the ground, the peiros, they still belong to the husband. Whereas the opinion of Rabbi Shimon is at that point in time, it was an advantage to him going in, it's a disadvantage to him going out, that they considered attached to the ground when they went in, and therefore their peiros for the husband. So if they're attached to the ground on the way out, they're considered now that they still belong to the wife. They don't yet have been transferred over to the husband. And then when he divorces her, they belong to the wife. So that's the difference between Rabbi Shimon and the Tanakhama, according to Rava. Now we're going to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, Naflu avodim ushvachos zekenim. If the wife goes and inherits avodim, male servants, ushvachos, female servants that are older, zekenim. So they're not going to be that much value from their work. They're older, they're not really capable of doing a lot of stuff. So the wife is afraid that they're never going to die. They're older. And the husband's afraid, listen, I'm not getting much of the parents over here. So what should they do in this situation when she inherited these older male or female servants? Yimachru. So the Mishnah tells us that they can be sold. And you take the profit that you get. They're not going to sell them for much, probably. But whatever they sold for, they sold for $100. So then, v'ilokach mehem karka, you take that as if she inherited money, which we said previously. You go and use the money that she inherits to buy karka, so this way she retains the principal, and the husband, who ochel peros, and he's entitled to the use of fraction rights, he goes and gets to eat the peros that are made from that karka. That's the opinion of the Chachamim, the Tanakhama. Rishim Gamaliel Omer, lo timkar. No, you're not allowed to go sell these older servants. Why? Because the idea that we just brought down a moment ago, because this is something that belongs to her family. And this is something that's like a precious heirloom of her family. And you don't go and sell that. And therefore, whatever it's worth, it's worth. If they end up dying, so they end up dying. But they die under her possession. Shevach Be'Saviyah retains itself in the family. And if the husband doesn't get a lot of benefit from them, they're older, they're not really able to do a lot of work for him. So no, he doesn't get a lot of peros. But you don't go sell these avodim ushvachos and go and purchase kark with them, according to Rishim Gamaliel, because of Shevach Be'Saviyah. Exactly the same thing is in the second part of the Mishnah. Naflu zeisim ugufanim zekenim. If she inherits, she gets, while she's in the sua, either zeisim, which are olive trees, or gufanim, which are vines, and they're old. They're not going to produce a lot of olives or grapes. So in this situation, again, the Tanakhama says that's not beneficial to her or to her husband, because she's not going to own them for a long time. They're not going to be worth that much because they're old. They're not really producing a lot of olives or grapes, and the husband's not getting a lot of olive or grapes. So therefore, the Tanakhama holds, Yimachru, Yilokach Behem Karka. You go and sell them, and whatever money you get, that's now like new money that falls to her as it was to Yerusha, and they buy Karka, and the husband gets to eat the peros from that Karka, and she gets to keep the principal. Ho, ho, peros, and she keeps the principal. Now here, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, not Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel, here Rabbi Yehuda says, like Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel, Yehuda Omer, lo timkar, she doesn't have to sell them. If they want to sell them, they're allowed to, but she doesn't have to sell them. The husband can't force her to sell them. Why? But they change Shevach Be'Saviyah. Again, this is her family's property. This is her family's land, her family olive trees, her family vines. They've been in the family for generations, and she can't be forced to go and sell them. If she wishes to keep them, she's allowed to go and keep them. Again, if everybody's in agreement, there's no discussion in this Mishnah. If everybody's in agreement, then you're allowed to go and sell them, even according to Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's no Shevach Be'Saviyah if she doesn't want the Shevach Be'Saviyah. But if she says, no, this is from my family, and I don't want to sell the servants, I don't want to go and sell this Zeisim or Gifanim, she has the right to prevent such a sale. Where it starts, it says, Amar Rav Kana, Amar Rav, Machlokish, Shenoflu, B'Sod HaShalom. The Machlokish between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda, the Sefer of the Mishnah, was Zeisim or Gifanim, Zekenim, so these vines or olive trees, so the Machlokish between the Chachamim who say that you're allowed to go and force the sale. The Tanakhama says you can force the sale. And Yehuda says, no, if she doesn't wish to have the sale because of Shevach Be'Saviyah, she doesn't have to. This Machlokis is only Shenafla B'Sod HaShalah, that when these vines or olive trees are in her field. So in her field, even there, the Tanakhama says we can force her to go and sell these trees and vines. Abu Basadish Ainishla, but everybody agrees. There's no machlokis. If she doesn't own the field, she just owns the vines or the trees, so Divriya called Timka, then there's no Shevach Besavi over here. Bishrum de Kor Kaya Karna. Because ultimately, when these trees no longer produce olives, the vines no longer produce grapes, it's gone. That's it. So in that situation, there's no Shevach Beis Aviyah, and even the Tanakhama, the Chacham would agree, Mishum the Kokaya Karna, since the Karna is being used up, that they can force a sale. Even if the wife protests, you'd be allowed to go and sell it. Okay, that's the opinion of Rav Kahana Marav. Rav Yossi doesn't like this. Maskel Rav Yossi says, wait a second, Hari Avodim Ushvachos, the Chichasada Sheino Shalodami Upligi. But the Reisha, which seems to be analogous to this case of her not owning the field, there's no continuation, so to say, of the Zeisim and the Gofanim once they stop producing fruit. So too, the Avodim Ushvachos, once they stop having children, there's no continuation of the Avodim Ushvachos Zekanim. So nevertheless, the Reish of the Mishnah, Rav Shmuel Galil, does argue with the Tanakhama, Mipnei Shehem Shevach Beis Aviyah. So wouldn't that same argument apply in the Reisha as well as the Seifa? So I disagree with you, Rav Yossi says to Rav Kahana Amarav. And Gemara says, Taki is right. If we did have a statement that Rav Kahana Amarav made, this was it. Amar Rav Kahana Amarav, he says, the Machlokis is only Besod Shein Shalom. If the olive tree and the vines belong in a field that she doesn't own, in that situation, that's what the Tanakhama says we can force the sale, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no, even there we can't force the sale. But everybody's in agreement, I've oversaw the Shalot, if the field is hers, then everybody would agree that you can't force the sale of it. If the wife doesn't want it, even the Tanakhama would agree that you can't force the sale because it's in her field, and this is Shevach Beis Aviyah. So even though the tree and the vine are no longer producing, but this is part of her field, her ancestral field, her family's field, and therefore you can't force her to sell. Next Nishma. Hamotzi Hotzos HaNichsi Yishto. If a man spent money, these are called Hotzos, he used his own money to go and improve the Nichsi Malug of his wife. So the wife has a field, and he put in a certain amount of money to fertilize the field, to prune the field, to go and care the field. He put up a fence around the field. These are all Hotzos. These are expenses on his part for the Nichsi Yishto, for the Nichsi Malug of his wife. So, despite the fact that he put in a lot, or even if he put in a little, even though he put in a lot of expenses, he put up a brand new fence around the field, and that year it didn't produce a lot, and it only produced $10 worth of payrolls, he put in $100 worth of fencing. Or, Kimma, he only put in a little bit, he put in $10 worth of fencing, and it produced $100 worth of crops. Nevertheless, whatever he put in, as long as he got back something, whatever he put in, he put in. Whatever he ate, we don't go quid pro quo. It has to be the same. And if the wife were to be divorced, so he can't go back in time. Hey, listen, I put $100 into your field. They only got back 10. You owe me $90. He can't say that. However, hotzi, if he just put in expenses, below ochal, he didn't have a chance to benefit at all from the crops. He fertilized the field. He hired people to go and plow the field, and they put in the seed into the field, and he had $1,000 worth of expenses. And now they get divorced, and he hasn't yet gotten any benefit from that field whatsoever. Hotzi, he put in expenses, below ochal, but he didn't, in fact, get any benefit from it. In that situation, Yishova, he swears, kama hotzi, what his expenses were, he has to swear, his wife can demand the shvua. Then he swear how much he put in, vito, and then he's allowed to go and take that because he got zero benefit from it. So in this situation, he's entitled to get compensated for his otzos. But if he got any benefit, afilu ochal kima, so then he's not entitled. Gemara says, how do we define kima? But kama kima, how much is a little bit of a benefit? If he had one grape, is that enough? So Ravasi said, afilu grogeres achas, even if he had even one dried fig, that is considered a benefit. It's kima, it's a very little benefit, but if he has any benefit, he's not entitled to his otzos. The otzos is a certain amount of expenses that he put in. He may gain a tremendous amount from it. His expenses may be tremendously overshadowed by the benefit that he gets. Or even if it's not, he put in a lot of expenses and only got a little benefit. That's it. The Mishnah says, even if he got any benefit, then he's not entitled to be paid for his otzos if Chas v'Shalom they get divorced and she takes back the field. This is true, however, Ravasi qualifies this and he says, Husha ochla dera kovot. Even though he has to only eat one fig in order for him to go and be considered getting benefit, he has to eat it in a fashion that is derech kovot, in a way that is considered a respectful and proper way. But if he ate it on the run, so to say, he was out in the field and he grabbed the fig, so then that's not considered that he got benefit. That's the definition of kima according to Rav Asi. Amar, we turn to daf pei yom aleph. Amar Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba disagrees and he says, Amri be Rav, they said the base medrash of Rav, afilu shigra de tamre. He says, even a smaller amount, even if it's a shigra de tamre, Rashi explains that shigra de tamre is tamarim. He states that a nidochim yachad, that are pressed together, kiderach shedarsin tainim, as is the custom that they would do with figs. So if you did this with dates as well, so then this is a very small amount. That's the first opinion of Rashi. Rashi then brings a second opinion that says that this is something called trios. They're very fresh. Kimin eshkol tomorrow, like a cluster of dates. However, he doesn't like that pshat because it implies that Rabbi Abba holds even a smaller amount, and that would be a larger amount. In any event, Rabbi Abba says even a smaller amount, even shigra de tamrei, which is less than one dried fig, so that amount is considered kima, that he ate something, he got benefit, and he's not entitled to his pay for his hot sauce. Rabbi Bibi asked the following question. Boy, Rabbi Bibi, what about chuvtza de tamrei? Now, chuvtza de tamrei, Rashi says, is la'achar sha'asu behem sheikhar, after you took these dates and you made them into beer, so the pulp that's left over is called chuvtza de tamrei. Nishar hapsolas, that's one pshat, or inami, nidochen arbi, or they're pressed together very, very strongly, and to make beer out of them, and this pulp that's found after you press them together and squeezed out all the juices, so this is chuvtza de tamrei. This is even less than the shigra de tamrei, which is even less than the grogeris. So in this situation, what's the halacha? If he benefited from that, is that considered benefit? So the Gemara says, take it. Here we don't have an answer. Is that considered a benefit or not? Okay. Gemara continues and says, what happens if lo ochla derekavod mai? We said that Rav Asi held that this little amount that he ate, the grogeris, had to be eaten with derech kavod. No, what happens if you didn't eat it derech kavod? Is there a limit therefore? If you ate a ton of stuff but you didn't eat derech kavod, is that considered that you didn't get any achila? Or no, even if you don't eat a derech kavod, so maybe one grogeris isn't considered significant, but if you had a couple of them, maybe that's considered significant. So what's the answer? Amar Ula Ula tells us this is a machlokis. There was a machlokis amaroyim in Eretz Yisrael. Marav is always Eretz Yisrael. Chad amar becheisar. Even though you didn't eat a derech kavod, if you ate an isar's worth, an isar is a certain coin, and it would be the value of that coin, which is a pretty significant amount, the amount of a shava isar. So if you ate that much, albeit it wasn't the derech kavod, that's considered that you ate, and therefore you're not entitled to be compensated for your expenses. And the other one said that it's a dinar's worth. A dinar is a much larger amount. There is an isar, there are 24 isarim in a dinar. So this is a 24 times as much shear as the first shear. So it's a tremendous discrepancy between these two amarayim. One said even an isar, 1/24th of a dinar is considered significant, albeit you didn't eat it derech kavod. And the other one said, no, if you want to have a significant amount of consumption that's not derech kavod, you have to have an entire dinar's worth. So there's a big difference between these two shitas. The Gemara doesn't paskin which one is correct. Then we have Amrei Dayane de Pumbedisa. The Dayanim in Pumbedisa said, who are the Dayanim in Pumbedisa? So the Gemara elsewhere tells us, and Rashi brings it down over here, that this is a reference to Rapapa Bar Shmuel. This is based upon the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where a lot of these statements were made. Who said what? Who is considered the Dayanim Pumbedisa? Said there, this is Rapapa Bar Shmuel. So he said as follows, Ovad Rav Yehuda Uvda B'chavilei Zemaros. There was such a ma'isa that came along that a wife had brought in certain vines into the marriage, and the husband hadn't eaten any grapes in the vines, but he had taken, when he pruned the vines, so he had taken some of those branches that he had pruned the vines and given them as food to his animal. Rashi points out that these vines are not normally edible by typical animals, however, they're Michael Lepilin. This is animal food. In the stomach, the guy had some animals that were elephants. The Hechel Mehem Abal of Hemto. And he fed these vines either to his elephants that he had, or he fed them to some other animal that was able to eat these vines. And then, Vigirash Es Ishto. Now, he divorced his wife, so she gets back her vines, but he said, hey, listen, I just put in $1,000 worth of improvements into those vines, and I didn't eat any grapes, so therefore I'm entitled to my $1,000 worth of improvements. But Rabbi Yehuda had paskin that he did get benefit over here because he gave some of the pruned vine branches to his elephant or to his other animals, and therefore he did consider to get some benefit. So this is called ochal kima, and if he's ochal kima, he's not entitled to any hotzos. That's what Rav Yehuda paskined. That's what the Dayanei Pupa D'Yisra, Papa Bar Shmuel, said, that Rav Yehuda had paskined such a maisa. And this was the explanation, Rav Yehuda L'taimei. This goes in accord with what Rav Yehuda said elsewhere. The Amar Rav Yehuda, that in regards to a making a chazaka by living in a certain area a certain number of years, the din is that a person, when he purchases something, gets a shtar. But we can't expect the person to hold on to a shtar necessarily for life. So therefore, if he can show that he lived on that field with 3 years' time, what's called shnas chazaka, and he has a taina as to how he got the field, I purchased it from you. If a person just sharecrops on a field for 3 years, he can't claim that that's his field. He has to have a taina. So here he has a taina. Reuven says, I bought this field from Shimon, and I lost my shtar. But I've been living and using this field for 3 years, so I have what's called chazaka from usage, the shnas chazaka of 3 years. So therefore, the person now is considered the muhsak in that field, and the other person would have to bring a raya that the field wasn't sold. Shimon would have to bring a raya that he didn't sell the field to Reuven. If Shimon claims that the field is really his, he has to go now and prove that either Reuven didn't live there for 3 years, or that he purchased it back from him, or that the original sale wasn't a good sale, whatever. In that situation, we count the chazaka, the 3 years, as being significant with the taina that he doesn't have to have the shtar. Now, Rav Yehuda had said in that regard, the Amar Rav Yehuda, if you included in those 3 years a year of Arla, Ochla Arla, he proves that he ate Arla, or Shvius, in the Shemitah year, the Kilayim. Now, there was grapes and vegetables or grain growing in that field. So then, all of these are Isurim. But nevertheless, even though he ate there in years of Isurim, Arla, Shvius, or Kilayim, they count towards the 3 years Chazaka. Harei Zu Chazaka. Now Rashi points out he didn't necessarily do an iser when it said that he ate from these things. So Rashi says lokeach shnei arla shein hanosin ala bizmoros shapri osur. So he didn't eat the fruits, but he used the branches which aren't osur. And likewise in the Shemitah year it was hefker, but he's allowed to go and get some benefit from the field. Or shezoro kilayim, when he planted the kilayim, hazmoros lo nesu. So the branches, again, were not osur. So in each of these situations, he's able to make a chazaka with the branches, which aren't osur. So Rav Yehuda l'taimei, that just like the feeding of the branches that he pruned from the vines is considered benefit, so too, the case of the Orla Shvius and Kilayim, that shows that he holds that, so therefore he was able to use it to show that the man did get benefit from the vines, and therefore he wasn't entitled to be paid for his hotzos. Mark continues and says, Amar Yaakov, Amar Chis, Rav Yaakov says the name of Chista. However, Hamotzi, Hotzos, Al Nirsi, Ishto, Ketana. If the wife was only married Midrabanan, Nebuch, the woman's father had passed away, the mother, the older brothers couldn't support her, so they married her off, so she shouldn't act in an immoral fashion if she's left Hefker. So therefore, they married her off Midrabanan, and she's allowed to leave at any point in time before she's a Gedola by doing Miyun. So, in this situation, her husband, who knows he's only married to be the Rabbanan to her, and she could leave at any point in time against his desire. So, in this situation, Rabbi Yaakov says in Rav Chista that if the husband put in expenses, Hamotzi, Otzos, Al Nirsi, Ishto, Kitana, now, he could put in all these expenses. His wife could walk away at any moment in time. So, therefore, the rabbis gave him additional powers in this situation that if she does walk away, he is entitled to his expenses, even if he did eat a little bit. Kamotzi al nichse acher dummy. This would be the same thing that if a person benefited somebody else's field, so you can't just say, well, tough luck, buddy, you fertilized the wrong field. No, he's entitled to the benefit that he did to that field up to the total amount of his expenses. If, let's say, he put in fertilizer in the wrong field, he put in $100 worth of fertilizer, and the field was now worth $200 more, so he's not entitled to the profit, but he's entitled to get back his $100. So we treat this husband of the Kitana as if he is considered like he did it for somebody else, and he's entitled to get back his expenses as long as the field improved at least the value of the expenses. My time, why? Because they did this to benefit the wife of the Rabban Takanta, because if they didn't allow this, the husband is going to say, I ain't putting any money into this field. I'm just going to use the field. I'm not going to fertilize it. I'm not going to put any money into the field because she can walk away at any moment and I'll be out all my expenses. So in order to protect her field, that the husband should take good care of it. So we said that even if he does put in expenses, he'll be able to get them back even if she walks away. So this is actually takana for her benefit in order that her field shouldn't get destroyed. Maisa Shoya. Hai Itza, there once was a certain woman, the Naflula Arba Meyazuzi Bechozoi. She inherited 400 zuzim, a large amount of money, but it was in a faraway city. It was in the city of Chuzoi. Rashi tells us this is the name of a place, Shemakom, Vayorocho came in. It was very, very far away. Now, they didn't have planes. They didn't have internet that you could easily summon FedEx or the postal service to go and deliver it. Vayomethik alea shish meya behotzos. That should be the Gerson. Rashi had derech mishalo. So the husband went to go and retrieve these 400 bucks, these 400 zuz. He spent 600 bucks to go and get it. Now, on the way home, he needed to pay a toll. He needed one zuz. And he took from the 400, one zuz. So he spent really $600 of his own already, 600 zuz. And now he took one of those 400 zuz to pay for his toll. Now, he gets back and he wants to divorce his wife. Nebuch, he says, you made me travel all the way to Chazoy for this $400. I thought the inheritance would be so much more. It wasn't worth it. So also the Kami the Ravami, he goes to Ravami and he wants to say, listen, I just put in $600 to get these 400 zuz. I should be entitled to at least get back 400 of my expenses. You can't expect her to pay for the entire 600, but she benefited 400, so at least let her pay me that 400. So Ravami says to Mamalei, he says, no, our Mishnah, Masha Otsi Hotsiu, Masha Achalocha. Did you eat something yet? You got a benefit of one zuz from that 400. And therefore, it's as if you ate something. And despite the fact that your expenses were 600, the fact that you got one zuz benefit, that's like eating one grogaris. And therefore, you're not entitled to be paid for your expenses. That's what Ravami paskin. But the rabbis were not happy with this. Amalei Rabbanu Ravami, you misunderstood over here. Hani Mila, when we said in the Mishnah that if he ate something, hecha de ka'ochu peira, that's when he ate the peiros of the field. So he put in $1,000 to improve the field. He fertilized it, he plowed it, and seeded it, etc. And he ate one fig. So then he ate something that was peira, and therefore he is considered compensated. But here, her karnika achil, here, the 400 zuz, the inheritance she had, was the karen. He's not entitled to that. So he only borrowed one zuz. He has to pay her back that one zuz that he used to pay the toll. So in that situation, he's eating the principal, karnak ochel, and therefore, he actually got no benefit because he has to pay that one zuz back. He owes her that one zuz. That was borrowed money. And therefore, he didn't get any benefit from the 400. And therefore, vote saw he, and therefore, this is as if he put in 601 zuz to go and get her 400 back. And therefore, in this situation, he is entitled to be compensated up to the value of the 400. So he won't be compensated 601, but he'll be compensated 400. And Ravami said, if that's the case, imkain, havalei hotzi v'lo ochal, that's the situation then, exactly like the Mishnah, where he put in expenses, but he didn't eat anything, so all he has to do in that situation is yishaba kama hotzi v'ito, then he just has to swear, I put in this much expenses, 601 zuzim, and he's entitled to go back, get back up to the value of the 400 zuz, so he would be able to get back, in that situation, his expenses up to the value of the field, up to the value of the inheritance. Mark continues by quoting the Mishnah, Yishava Kama Hotzi V'Yito. The man makes the Shvua, the husband makes the Shvua, how much his expenses were. If he didn't benefit at all, he's allowed to then go get paid back for his expenses. Amar Vasi, Ravasi says, V'hu Shiyei Shevach Kineged Hotzah. As I pointed out, that's only assuming that there is an improvement in the field that is at least as much or greater than the value of the Hotzah. Otherwise, they're not entitled to take the Hotzah. Now, Rashi says there are two possible ways to understand this. As we go to the next words, Lamai Hilchosa, in what way should we understand Ravasi's halacha? So Rashi says there's two possible ways to understand this. As we can see in the Rashi, Lamai Hilchosa, Dibra Masu, Lamai Hilchosa Kalmar. V'hu, Shahaya Shevach Kineged Yitzia. If we're saying that the improvement in the field, the Shevach, was the same amount as the Yitzia, so then La'akule Ole, that in that situation it's a Kula that Ravasi is saying, the Iko Shevach Tvei, if the benefit to the field was more than his expenses, so then Lo Boy Shvua, he doesn't even have to make a Shvua. So it's a Kula, they say, that he doesn't have to make a Shvua if the Shevach was more than the Hotzah. That's one way to understand possibly Ravasi. The second way is to say it's a chumrah. Oli achmuri ale. He's making a chumrah here, ulamemer, and he's saying, the yitzia yisera, that if the expense is more than the shevach, lo shakil elo kishir shevach. This is what I've been saying. This is the ultimate answer, that he's only going to be allowed to take up to the amount of the shevach. If he put in $100 and it's only improved $50, he can't get $100. He only gets the $50. And even with the shvua, We don't say that he's allowed to swear, listen, I had 100 expenses, I get 100 bucks. No, he only gets up to the level of the Shevach. So these are the two possible ways to understand Rav Asi. The Gemara says, Lamai Hilcha, so which way is the proper way to understand this? So Abaye says, Am Abaye, Shemaya Shevach Yosir al Hotzah, that if the Shevach was more than the Hotzah, the expenses were 100, but the benefit was 200, so then Abaye says it's like the first opinion that we brought down to Rashi Lakula, no Tilas Hotzah below Shua, then he doesn't have to make a Shua. Rava doesn't like this. Omelie Rava says, no, Im Kain, Asili Arume. He's going to cheat. Everybody's going to say, yeah, my expenses were very, very low and compared to the Shevach. And this way, he won't have to make a Shvua. So he knows that the Shevach was 100. He'll say, yeah, I only put in 99, and he won't have to make a Shvua when he really only put in 50. And this way, he'll cheat. So Rava says, therefore, it's the second way that we understood in Rashi for Rav Asi. Rava, Shem Haisa Hotzah Yisera Al Shevach, that if the benefit was only 50, and he put in 100, so then he has to swear, but Ein Lo El Hotzah Shir Shevach. He has to make a Shvua, but he's only going to get up to the full amount of the benefit, so he'll only be entitled to 50, even though he put in 100 expenses. More asks now the following Shiloh, Ibalu, they ask the following Shiloh based Medrash, Baal Shahorit Arisin Tachtov. If instead of the husband himself taking care of the Nichse Maluk field that his wife had brought into the marriage, he goes and hires Arisin. Now, if the Arisin put in a certain amount of work and effort, so they normally would expect to be paid for it. But here, he divorces the wife, and now he didn't get any benefit from the field, so if he was the Aris, he would only be entitled to get back his expenses if he got no benefit from the field. But if he did get some benefit from the field, he wouldn't be entitled to get back his expenses. If he ate one dried fig, then he would not be entitled to get back the $200 that he put into fertilizing the field. So what is the status of the Arisin that are taking his place? Mahu, do we say, Adaito de Baal Mochis, that they're basically taking his place, and therefore if they got any benefit, so then they're not entitled to their Hotzos. Istalik le Baal, Istalik lu, just like the husband could be pushed off without being compensated because he got some benefit, so too they could be pushed off without getting compensated for their improvements because they got some benefit. Or do we say, no. Oh, Dilma, Adaita, the Aranochis, the Ara, Kikaima, Larisi, Kaima. And the rules of sharecropping apply to them. They're a sharecropper. And the sharecropper puts in a certain amount of benefit. He's entitled to get paid for those benefits if the crop doesn't make a certain amount, depending on the relationship that it always has with the owner of the field. So they're essentially unrelated to the Baal in this aspect or not. That's the question that the Gemara asks. And on this, Masik lo Rava Baruch Hanan. Rava Baruch Hanan said, "Maishno mehayori lishol sedei chaveru unitosh lo brishus shomin lo." Just like if a person by accident went into his friend's field and improved it, so he's entitled to go get a certain benefit, the amount that he put in up to the level of the shevach. So then he's entitled to get that back. Albeit viyodu ala tachtona, he gets the lesser of the two. So if the field improved 200, he only put in 100, he only gets 100. But the field only improved 50, and he put in 100, he only gets 50. So why wouldn't we treat the sharecropper in the same exact way? So Gemara says, because hasam leka inish de torach. In that situation, if the sharecropper didn't go in there, nobody else was going to go in there. But here, hacha ika baal de torach. The baal is basically saying, the sharecroppers, you go do my job. But if they don't do it, so then he would have to do it. And therefore, in this situation, anything that the sharecroppers did, it is essentially causing the wife a loss because her husband would have done it for free. So therefore, one could argue that the case of a regular person going into a field and improving it is different than the case of the husband having the sharecroppers go into the field and improve it. And therefore, that's not a clear answer. So Gemara says, my happy law, what is the answer? So the Gemara says, Omar Rav Huna, brother of Yeshua, Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yeshua, said, Chazinon, you have to go look at the case, Ibal Arisu, if the husband himself would have been capable of doing the sharecropping, so then why should the wife lose out? Because the husband chose to get other sharecroppers. So istalik lay bal istalik lu. In that situation, if you remove the husband from the equation, so then the sharecroppers are also not in the equation. The husband should have done the work. And therefore, you can't expect the wife to lose out because the husband decided to go and have sharecroppers come in there. However, Ibal Lav Arisu, he's a doctor. He's not a sharecropper. He's busy with his practice. And in this situation, he's not able to go and do this. So then, Aro Li Arisa Kaima, he never would have been the one to go and do this. Therefore, this would be the standard relationship that the woman would have with sharecroppers coming into her land, that she would be expected to give them a percentage of the crops and to pay for the hotzos, the expenses, in order to have her field be a good field. So Rav Huna Breda Rishu says it depends. If the husband would have been able to do this, so then the sharecroppers are out of the equation and they have the same rules as the husband. If they put in totzos and got something, so then, ochal kima, that's it. they're not entitled to the otsos. But if the husband wouldn't have been able to do it, then the sharecroppers are not coming in the place of the husband, they're coming in separate, and therefore they would be allowed to go and get compensated for their otsos. Where it's another question, what happens if the husband sold the nirsei melug peros? Now, he's not allowed to sell the karen, it doesn't belong to him, but he's entitled to get the peros. Is he allowed to sell the rights to the peros? Do we say, mi amrinon, my dekone? Now, we have the girsa law, but it really shouldn't be there. And Osei in the Masoros HaShas, the Rif leaves this out. In any event, so my dekone, Akne, whatever he has the right to go and use, he's allowed to go and sell. Or do we say Alduma? No. Ki takinu le rabbanim peros lebal. Why did the rabbi set up the peros for the husband? Why should he get that? We turn to pay on the beis. Mishum rabach beisa. In order there should be more food in the house, more bounty in the house. So abo lizabune, that he should just get money to put into an account somewhere. Lo, that's not the purpose that the rabbis instituted, that he's entitled to the peros of her nirsei meluk. So what's the answer? Yehuda bar Meremar mishmei the Rava Amar Masha Asa Asri. Yehuda bar Meremar says in the name of Rava that the husband has the right to go sell it. If he sold it, it's a valid deal. On the other hand, Rapapa Amar mishmei the Rava. Rapapa, however, said in the name of Rava. Both of them are saying in the name of Rava. Rapapa says in the name of Rava lo asa velo klum. No, the husband doesn't have the right to go and sell this. Now, Rapapa then said that Yehuda bar Meremar didn't actually hear this from Rava directly himself, and therefore he's wrong. Amar Papa ha Yehuda mar bar mireimar la b'feirishit bar. He didn't hear it directly in the name of Rava, so therefore he is wrong, as I will show you. And I'm right. I heard it directly in the name of Rava. He heard it indirectly. Ela miklolit bar. He heard Rava say something else, and he assumed that would be Rava's opinion in this situation, but it's wrong. What did he hear from Rava? The ha'i itza, the once was a woman. The ailei legavra Tarte Amosa. She brought into the marriage, she got married, she was in a sewer, she brought in two maidservants to go and take care of her needs and her husband's needs. The husband then went and got married to somebody else. Ozel Gavra, her husband went, Nosiv Itzachrite, and Ayelo Chodo Minayu. He went and got married to a second wife, and he took one of the maidservants that the first wife had brought in and gave it to the second wife. Now, I saw Lakami the Rava. The first wife was not happy about this, and she went to Rava. Tzadacha, she yelled, and she screamed, she said, that's not right. And yet, lo ashkach ba, Rava didn't pay her appropriate attention. In other words, Rava said, no, I'm sorry, he has the right to do this. Why? Man dechaza, so Yehuda mar bar miremer thought that the reasoning was, savar mishum desavar masha asa asa. He thought because the husband is given the two maidservants, the husband is given the rights to the peros, and he can do with it whatever he wants. So therefore, Yehuda mar bar miremer said, that's Rava's opinion. But that was not right. Velohi. That wasn't why Rava didn't say anything in this situation. Rava didn't say anything in this situation because by the husband giving the first wife's maidservant, one of them, to the second wife, it was actually Mishum Revach Beisa. That would make the house better. After all, she's cleaning up the house. The whole house will be better. So the servants are doing the work of the house. Not that the husband's actions are allowed to go through no matter what. V'hokor Revach. So this was an improvement on the house. But in a situation where it's not an improvement on the house, so then Rava never said that the husband's Masha Asa Asui. And in fact, Rapapa says, Rava's opinion was, Lo Asa Lo Klum, if it wasn't for the benefit of the house. How do we pass it? The Gemara says, V'hokasa. Baal Shemach HaKarkal Peros Lo Asa Lo Klum. We paskin like this opinion. Rapapa said, name of Rava, that if the husband went and sold his rights to the Peros, he doesn't have the right to do so. It's as if he did nothing. Why? My time. So Abaye says, Abaye Omar Chayshinon Shema Tachsev. Because in this situation, if he goes and sells the rights to the produce to somebody else, that other person won't really care about the field. All he wants is the produce. He bought it for 2 years, the rights to the produce. He's going to use that field without fertilizing it. He's going to use the field to the maximal capability. He doesn't care about the long-term consequences. And therefore, that's why the reasoning is that he can't go and sell the payrolls of the field because it will deteriorate the field for the wife, and that's not fair to her. That's a bias reasoning. Rav Amar, Mishum Revach Beisa. As we just pointed out, Rav holds because no, it won't. The purpose of this takana, that the husband should have the payros, was to have more plenty in the house. And by selling that and just keeping money in a bank account somewhere, that is not going to increase revach besa. Is there a nafkamina between Abaye's reasoning, that it's shemotachsif, we're concerned that the field will deteriorate in value, and Rava's reasoning, that we want to have plenty in the house, revach besa? Maybe nayu, is there a nafkamina? So the Gemara says, yes, there is. Ikame nayu, there is a nafkamina. Ara de mikrav lemosa, if the field is right near where they live. So if the field is right near where they live, so they'll be able to see that the sharecropper or the person that they sold the rights to the payros is not taking good care of the field, and they can go and complain. So in that situation, Abaye's concern wouldn't be present, but Rava's concern, Rebach Beisa, would still be present. Alternatively, another nafkamina would be Inami Baal Arisu, if the husband himself was an Aris, and he is the one that's taking care of the field for the person that he sold the rights to the parents to. So in this situation, he'll obviously make sure that the field won't get worse. So Abaye's concern is not a concern, but Rebach Beisa will still be a concern. Alternatively, the third nafkamina would be Inami Zuze the Ko'avibu Iska, that we're dealing over here with. He gives him money, and he takes that money, and he does business with it. So now there'll be Revach Besa. So there, Rava's concern doesn't apply, but Abaye's concern about deterioration of the field, that still would apply. So therefore, we have several nafkaminas. Let's go to the next Mishnah. Shomeris Yovim Shenafel Lo Nechosin. If you have a woman that Nebuch lost her husband, and she's waiting to be taken in Yibam by her dead husband's brother. A classical case of Shomeris Yovim. So, Shenafel Lo Nechosin. Now, Mitten Derinin, and while this is going on, so she's waiting to be taken in Yibam, she inherits something from a relative. So she now has money coming in, Nechosin, to come into this relationship. So who do they belong to? So Modim Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai is Modim to Beis Hillel, Shomer Cheres, that the widow in this situation, the wife who's awaiting to be taken in Yibam, the Shomeris Yavam, is able to go Mocheres V'Nosenes V'Kaim. She can go sell this property that she inherited, she can give it away, and the deal is a deal. The Yavam doesn't have the right to go and prevent it. This is the opinion of everybody. Beis Shammai is Modim to Beis Hillel, that's the case. Now, what happens if while she's waiting to be taken in Yibam, Mesa, she never dies? So who does this property belong to? Mayasu b'ksubasa. What do we do with her entire ksuba? The ksuba was on the first husband, and now she died. So ubinuchasim hanichnasim v'yotzimima. What do we do as well with the nichsei melug? These are the properties that came with her. The husband has the right to use them. He has the usufruction rights, as we said many times, but they belong to the wife. So what do we do with her ksuba, which is the mano masayim, depending on whether she was a besula or whether she was a ba'ula, and as well any tzom barza that were written into the ksuba? And now, also, what about the nechasim and nechasim yotzimimah, the nechasim look? So here we have a machlokus. Beshama yomrim yachloku, that we have to go and split these properties, yorshia bal im yorshia av, the inheritance of her husband, in other words, the other brothers that may be present, not only the Yavam, but all the brothers who would be inheriting the brother, because there are no children, obviously, im yorshia av, with her inheritors. She's called, the woman herself is called yorshia av. Her inheritors are her father. So it's not clear, does she fall under the domain of the Yavam, or does she fall under the domain of her father in this situation? So this is a machlokus. If there were no Yibam considerations, so then 100%, it would go to her yorshim. If she had no children, it would go to yorshia av. So that's clear. But here, where she has no children, and there is somebody waiting to do Yibam with her, so the question is, how do you split these properties? Beis Shammai says you split them down the middle, the yorshia bal im yorshia av. So in other words, we don't have a clear-cut destination for where those properties go, and we split them. Beis Hillel disagrees. Beis Hillel Amrim, nechasim beches kasim, you leave everything where it is. So what exactly does this mean? So one way to understand this is that now we're going to explain what this means. Uksuba becheskes yorshia bal, that the ksuba is considered to be in the hands of the yorshim. They're the ones that have the ksuba. That's the husband, the dead husband's properties. That doesn't belong to her. That belongs to the yorshim of the baal. So the ksuba, the mona masayim, and the tzon barzel, they belong to the husband's yorshim. Nechasim and nechlasim yotzim nima, the nisim aluk, however, that's in her possession. That during the marriage was in her possession. So that goes to her yorshim, becheskas yorshei ha'av. Now, this is actually a very complicated sugya in the Gemara in Yevamos, where the simple reading that I just gave you is not the maskana. So I'll just point out that that opinion, which says, Beishama yomim, yachloku, yorshia aval, im yorshia av, is not the right answer. They don't distribute everything evenly, 50-50 between them. They're really talking about the nichsei melug only. They're not talking about the ksuba or the nichsei tzom barzel. In that regard, Beis Shammai actually agrees with Beis Hillel. But that was a huge sugya that we had in the Gemara in Yevamos. We're not going through it again now. But the simple reading that I just said is not the halach l'maisa. In addition, as I mentioned, the simple reading that I said, nechasim v'cheskasan, which seemed like an introductory statement, and then we qualify it by saying that the ksuba goes to the husband's yorshim and the nechsei melug go to the wife's yorshim, is not exactly correct either. And really, the maskana of the Gemara in a number of places is that the first statement, Nichosin b'cheskosin, is a reference to the Nichsei Tzon Barzel. That was a specific statement as well. And it's a machlokes as to who they go to in the Gemara in Bava Basra. The second statement is the Ksuba, so that is the Mone or Mosayim that's referred to in the Ksuba. And the third statement is the Nichsei Melug, that is an entitlement that goes to her side, to her Yoshim, her father. Mishnah continues and discusses what happens if the Yavam is going to go and eventually marry her. So she doesn't die. Hiniach ochiv mos. If the dead brother had money. So what do you do with that money? It's really held in escrow for her ksuba, because her ksuba comes from her dead husband's pocket and not from the Yavam's pocket. So what do you do with money that he had? So hiniach ochiv monos, you lock up in karka, you go buy karka with that money. So this way she will have the principal and the Yavam will be able to go and eat the peros. V'u'olcha peros. Similarly, peros hatlushim in akarka, if when the brother passed away, there was detached fruits, in other words, they were metalkalin, so yilokach bem karka. That's like money. You buy with that karka, and the husband, v'u'olcha peros, the new Yavam, the new husband, will go and eat the peros. She gets the principal. But if it's attached to the ground, so we have a machlokis. Amar Rav Meir, shamanos are kamen hin yavos beperos, the kamen yavos below peros. You look at the land with and without that amount of growth on it, and the amount of growth on it is the improvement in the land. You take that, bamosa, that amount, you lakach bem karka, that's considered like an asset to the wife, that she has to go and have karka purchased on her behalf, and the husband, hu achal peros, that karka, he'll have the right to the peros, and she keeps the karen. Chum disagree. Chum Rav, no. Paris hamuchubar mekarka shalom. Anything that's still attached to the ground, that belongs to him. That belongs to the Yavam. And the Gemara will discuss why they hold like this, because it doesn't make sense. Why should that just belong to him? That was part of the estate of her dead husband. But in any event, we'll explain it when we get to the Gemara. So Paris hamuchubar mekarka, we say shalom. However, hatlushim, the Chum say, that which is already detached from the karka, call it kodem zochben. So if while the husband was alive, it was detached from the ground and she got it, it belongs to her. But if she didn't take it, and then when the husband passed away, it's still untaken, so then it belongs to the Yavam. Kodem hu zocha. Kodem hi, yilokach bem karka u'achal peros. It belongs to her. But again, any money that comes in, you use it to buy principal for her, karka, and the husband has the right to eat the peros. Finally, the Mishnah continues and says, kansa. Once he marries her, then she's a full-fledged wife, like we learned in the Gemara in Yevamos, with one exception. Bovad, the one exception is, she takes subasa al nichsei bala rishon, that the first husband's estate pays her ksuba. And as we pointed out, if there isn't money in the first husband's estate, so the rabbi is even sakin that the second husband should pay the ksuba. But in any event, lo yomar lo, he's not allowed to say to her, harei ksuba seich munachas al shulchan, here, go take your ksuba from this, and then the rest of the properties of your ex-husband, your dead husband, that aren't going to be used as a payment for the ksuba. He doesn't have the right to do that, just like a regular husband can't do that. All of the dead husband's properties are going to be leaned for the ksuba. Likewise, a regular man can't say to his wife, here's a field, this is the value of your ksuba, and the rest of my properties aren't leaned for your ksuba. No. In general, every one of his properties is going to be leaned for her ksuba. Finally, the Mishnah concludes, Girsha, if he divorces her, so ain lo el ksuba, she has the only rights to the ksuba from the first husband's property, unless, as we said, there wasn't enough money there, and then the rabbis were masaking that he should pay the ksuba. But then if he takes her back, Kirzira, Harei, he could call a nashim. It's like any other woman that's maxi grushasu in a permissible way. The husband's allowed to return if he's not a kohen to remarry his wife if she didn't get married to somebody else. But the original ksuba, which was never paid, is the ksuba for the second marriage as well. And she only has one ksuba. She doesn't have the ksuba from the first marriage and then a new ksuba from the second marriage. No. If he didn't pay off the first ksuba, so that the first ksuba becomes the ksuba for the second marriage. So in this situation, the Yavam doesn't have to write a new ksuba for her. The original ksuba that was from her first husband would apply to her as well. Baruch Hashem, we completed another amud to get ahead, and it's a long shiur today. I apologize, but Baruch Hashem, it sets it up very well for Sukkot. With this, we conclude today's shiur. Everybody should have a wonderful day.